Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Be very, very quiet. Elmer Fudd is hunting rabbits. It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. A genetically superior Medicare podcast. His dream of attending a Redskins game is now crushed. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. We are so happy to have you here today. I'm hoping that we can justify the time that you're going to spend with this short little abbreviated podcast with some major Medicare information. And frankly, I'm going to have to draw that Medicare information from my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. Because otherwise, there would be no reason to have the podcast if I couldn't promote a product for you to go buy. So tell you what, go to BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com, put into the search window, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. Don't forget the numbers, and you will find a plethora of Medicare knowledge at your fingertips. And the price is quite reasonable. You can have a Kindle version for less than $4. If you've got a reading device that Amazon's products are supported by, you can have an Audible version. You can listen to me talk to you about Medicare. You can get a paperback for about $8 that will be your introduction to paper to Medicare. Or if you have a friend or relative who's crossing that line into Medicare or even approaching Medicare, or if you've got a friend or relative that you want to poke fun at for getting to be old, they don't even have to be 50 years old. Get them my book in hardcover version, and they'll know that you're kidding them. And it's all good natured, but you can warn them, you know, age 65 is sneaking up on you. Anyway, once you buy my book and read it and absorb that knowledge, which isn't going to take you very long because frankly, it is artfully crafted in such a way that the knowledge will go down like a spoonful of sugar, you're going to find that you are the Medicare expert in your neighborhood. All of your friends and neighbors will come to you for Medicare advice, and that'll be pretty cool. So I also want to say that today is an extra special day around the Jones house. The most severe critic who assigns a letter grade to each episode of the podcast is having a birthday today. Now, we're not going to dwell on which birthday it is, but that is a special event that we are consumed with. And so I'm up early today, and I woke Randy up early to get the podcasting work out of the way so that we could celebrate the rest of the day. Randy, do I look celebratory? Have I gotten up too early today, perhaps?
You look absolutely bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, Mr. Jones.
Well, thank God, because I do have a responsibility to, you know, when I wake up a lot of times on my birthday, I have to be told that it's my birthday because it's not the first thing I think about. When I wake up and I forget somebody else's birthday, there is hell to pay.
Then it's a problem. Well,
it becomes a serious problem.
I did mention to you before we started the session today that I wanted to wish Mary a happy birthday.
You certainly did. You're in the I checked your box on the sheet, cool. The list.
And there's one other famous person in addition to Mary that has a birthday today.
Tell me who that would be.
August Bush.
Ah, yes, yes. Well, I'll tell you, my neighbor across the street should be commemorating that day because he will drink nothing but Budweiser. And there are times when he drinks copious amounts of Budweiser. He likes it straight out of the freezer. So you put it
what?
In. Yeah,
what in the world?
Likes it.
What? Oh, my God. Stop
it. He likes it almost chewable. What he does is he keeps it in the refrigerator, but if he comes over I have to know about it a half an hour ahead of time because that Budweiser has to go into the freezer a half an hour before he drinks it.
That is just anti-American.
I can't explain it. All I can do is accommodate him because we want to keep peace in the neighborhood.
Oh, my God. I've never heard of such a thing. Now, I've heard the other way around, people that like me that don't like it all that cold. I mean, over the course of the years, I've gotten to the point where I kind of like it pretty much just cool.
I can't say that would be as tasty if it were an American lager, but I mean, you're drinking as much. What is your brand again?
Guinness.
Guinness. Yeah. Your Guinness may taste different at a different temperature than a different kind of beer. Is that possible?
It clearly does. And next time you're over and we're doing a podcast out of the Carson Pub, I will show you the difference and I may make a convert. You never know.
Well, possibly. I did enjoy the Guinness that I had when we were at your house a couple of years ago, out in the driveway on a warm morning. It was a beautiful day, and I enjoyed the Guinness I had very much. Didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did. So I'm looking forward to our next opportunity to do that. Something else just occurred to me, an event that just tugged at my heartstrings. I love it when this happens. You may remember my nephew, Drew McMillan, lives in Canada. And
yes.
his parents came down here during a really bad week. I mean, Arizona's had a really bad winter, cold, rainy, wet. And so it's still better than Canada. And so Drew's mother and father and two couples that are friends of theirs came down and rented a $2 million house up on Schoolhouse Road. And so we grabbed a bunch of our friends and went to visit them halfway through their week in Arizona. And they're very active and they party a lot like many Canadians do. And the thing that brings a tear to my eye, the reason that I think my sister is just the most wonderful person in the world, and I had forgotten about this, is that at the end of the week, it became obvious that their eyes were bigger than their consumption capabilities, and they had all kinds of booze left over. So she called me on Saturday morning when they were going to leave saying, I've got snacks and beer, and I'm bringing them over because we can't take them on the airplane. So they brought over all of this stuff, and one was a 12-pack of Sol beer, S-O-L. You ever hear of that?
Mm-mm.
Well, I assumed that, the Canadians will drink damn near anything, and I assumed that it probably was unpalatable to them. I assumed that they probably got a couple of 12-packs and tore into one and found it wasn't drinkable, and so they just gave me the other one unopened. But I tried one. I gave it away to a friend, Clarence, who has been a guest on our podcast. He had a little party the other day for Mary, and so I gave him that 12-pack, and I said, here you go. Here's a host gift for you. And then he wound up guilting me into having one with him, and I did, and I was surprised. It was pretty tasty stuff. It's a Mexican beer. I think probably it's not like Guinness in that it doesn't have a lot of flavor. It's not, chewable. I think you'd want to have it cold, but it is not objectionable to me. So I want to say thank you to my sister for buying all the booze they could carry out to the car in their liquor store run and not drinking at all, because I was able to avoid a liquor store run for at least several weeks based on all the stock they gave me for my refrigerator. And
are you still stocked?
I'm working down to my normal amount of product that I concentrate on. Our next door neighbors blew in from New York, and he gave me a 12-pack of Miller High Life in bottles, and then he gave me a 6-pack of Scottsdale Blonde And I didn't think I was going to like that, but it turned out I drink one can of that a day, and it's pretty tasty. So I'm slowly getting back to my normal routine of just Miller High Life, and then I stock up on the Budweiser for my neighbor when he comes over to visit, and that's about it normally. So cleaning
house. I do have a question, Doug.
Ask away.
Now, when you talk about your sister and brother-in-law and all the other relatives of the Joneses up in Canada land,
mm-hmm.
do they drink anywhere like the Aussies?
Oh, I believe they've outclassed the Aussies.
They've outclassed the Aussies because that's really going some. You know that.
It is. I'll tell you, when I went to Drew's wedding a few years ago, it was in the southernmost part of Ontario. So it was east of Detroit and actually south of Detroit. I don't know what they call that little place, but it was really nice. Middle of the summer, it was very warm. And boy, did they... did they go to work on the bar? And those bartenders were working feverishly. And then I saw them carrying, because we went up north several hours, maybe a couple hours north of Barrie, to their cottage on a lake near Muskoka. And boy, there was plenty to be drank also there. So they, that's... partying is an important part of the Canadian culture, as far as I can tell.
Well, you know, when I found out that your nephew Drew was a CPA,
uh-huh.
I thought that had to do with financials.
Canadian party animal, sure.
That's right. It had nothing to do with financials. It's Canadian party animal. So,
yeah.
You know, in my nominal gig here as producer, I'm going to encourage us to step over the line into Medicare. So, but... my mouth is watering. You got it started about, looking for a beer here shortly.
All righty. Well, let's get the work out of the way and we can then go out and play, as you described to me. And I have a whole stack of stuff that I've been collecting over the last month or so, maybe more than a month. And it seems that the most severe critic, who assigns a letter grade to each podcast episode, likes it when I have a bunch of shorter subjects. So I'm going to kind of whip through some things that are from this pile, and we'll see if we hit on anything that we like to chit-chat about in greater detail. One article, I didn't intend to read this whole article. It's several pages long, and frankly, it's not germane to anything right now. We'll have to see how this little game plays out, but apparently there's a move afoot. You know how the Democrats, the liberals in the political spectrum in America, are typically antithetical to the opinions that Randy and I hold, the political opinions. But there is one thing that we all agree on, and that is that Medicare Advantage plans are bad, bad, bad. They're bad for the people they cover. They're bad for the economy. They're bad for the Treasury. And so we have allies in the left wing of the political party that are united with us in our fight against Medicare Advantage plans. Now, there is apparently a move on in Congress to actually reduce the reimbursement that Medicare Advantage plans are going to be given from the Treasury starting next year, starting in 2024. And I think that reduction is planned to be a fraction larger than 2%. So it's like 2.6% or something like that is what they're talking about right now. That's why I'm not going to waste a lot of time reading this article. That could change drastically, or it could go away. But the headline of this article indicates another element of the struggle. And the headline is Medicare Advantage plans could absorb the hit from a proposed rate change rather than cutting benefits or increasing their premiums, I think is the unspoken part. So even if we penalize Medicare Advantage plans by charging them more money, which would be an ideal situation from a Treasury perspective or a financial perspective, instead of the federal government paying more than they make so that their profits are huge, if they cut back on that payment rate, it would cost us less per Medicare Advantage participant, and the Medicare Advantage plans apparently would be able to absorb that increased payment without reducing benefits to their beneficiaries. So I just wanted to say that there is a move on in Congress to make the Medicare Advantage plans more accountable and less of a drain on the Treasury. And then here's another article I had filed with that. Key senators blast Medicare Advantage insurers for exorbitant salaries and massive payouts to their executives. Now, I'm going to read a little bit of this because this came from Stat Plus, an online publication that will not show me more than a couple of paragraphs. Otherwise, it insists that I send them money for a subscription, and I'm just not going to do that. But the headline is from Washington, D.C. It says, Senators Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat, and Jeff Merkley, a Democrat from Oregon, slammed seven different Medicare Advantage insurers for lobbying against proposed rate cuts. Remember the rate cuts I just told you about? Like 2.5% or thereabouts? Well, they're lobbying against those rate cuts. They don't want their reimbursement rates cut. And so they're working to stifle that particular political movement. And these two senators, these Democrats, have slammed them for lobbying against rate cuts to the program while their executives still collect exorbitant salaries and give massive payouts to their shareholders. The strong language came in a series of letters from two key Senate Democrats to Humana, Centene, United Healthcare, Aetna, CVS Health, Molina Health, Elevance Health, and Cigna, which collectively account for 70% of the market for Medicare Advantage. And then they say that Medicare Advantage is a private alternative to traditional Medicare. That's not entirely true. It is completely financed by the federal government, and it is dictated. Many of its rules and parameters are dictated by the federal government. It's pretty far from a private solution to health insurance. And then it goes on to say nearly all of these companies, along with the insurance industry's major trade group, AHIP, America's Health Insurance Plans, have been pushing back against a Biden administration proposal that would cut baseline payments to the plans by 2.3%, this article says. So they really don't want that 2.3 or 2.5 or 2.6% cut. So they're fighting to avoid that cut. But yet they are draining money from the treasury because every time somebody signs up for a Medicare Advantage plan, the federal government writes a big fat check to whatever Medicare Advantage plan they have signed up for. So that's where things stand today. Hopefully we'll have some more developments to report down the road. Now, here's a little interesting article that I have an opinion on, but I'd like to find out what Randy's opinion on. If you have a doctor's appointment, if you have your choice between doing a virtual appointment or an in-person doctor's appointment, which kind of appointment do you think is better, Randy?
Well, this is a personal preference, but I think for the most part, I would go for the virtual.
So would I. And the reason for that is because I don't really like hanging around doctor's offices. And I think Randy and I are probably in the majority of most dudes in the country. Women seem to like that hands-on approach, and so I'm not sure women would generally answer in the same way as we did. But let me tear into this article and see if it sheds any light on the reason for the choices. When the COVID-19 panic swept the country in early 2020 and emptied doctor's offices nationwide, telemedicine was suddenly thrust into the spotlight. And alert listeners to this podcast will remember that I'm a big proponent of telemedicine. I say, why have to go to the doctor's office when you can explain your symptoms to them over the telephone? Or in this case, telemedicine probably means like Zoom. Patients and their physicians turn to virtual visits by video or phone rather than risk meeting face-to-face. I didn't care about any risk. I just wanted the convenience of face-to-face meetings. So during the early months of the panic, telehealth visits for care exploded. It was a dramatic shift in 1 or 2 weeks that we would expect to happen in a decade, says a Harvard professor. It's great that we served patients, but we did not accumulate the norms and papers that we would normally accumulate so that we can know what works and what doesn't work. Now, 3 years later, we're still figuring that out. And although telehealth use has moderated, it has found a role in many physician practices, and it's popular with patients. More than any other field, behavioral health has embraced telehealth. Mental health conditions accounted for just under 2/3 of telehealth claims in November. Wow. So most of the video visits to doctors have been for mental health. That's something I didn't expect to see. Telehealth appeals to a variety of patients because it allows them to simply log onto their computer and avoid the time and expense of driving, parking, arranging childcare that an in-person visit often requires. But how do you gauge when to opt out or to opt for a telehealth visit versus seeing your doctor in person? There are no hard and fast rules, but there are some guidance about when it may make more sense to choose one over the other. If it's your first visit as a patient, you're trying to evaluate the physician to see if you can talk to them and trust them. It's hard to do that on a telemedicine visit. Maybe your insurance has changed and you need a new primary care doctor. Well, that doesn't happen if you have a Medicare supplement. You don't need a primary care doctor, and you don't have to show up in his office if you don't want to. And this is the article that goes on to say, or perhaps you have a chronic condition that your doctor has suggested adding a specialist to the team. A face-to-face visit can help you feel comfortable and confident with their participation. Sometimes an in-person first visit can help doctors evaluate their patients in non-tangible ways, too. After a cancer diagnosis, for example, an oncologist might want to examine the site of the biopsy. But just as important, he might want to assess a patient's emotional state. A diagnosis of cancer is an emotional event. It's a life-changing moment, and a doctor wants to respond to that. There are things you can miss unless you're sitting a foot or two away from that person. Once it's clear how the patient is coping and responding to treatment, that's a good time to discuss incorporating telemedicine visits. And another element, if a physical exam seems necessary, this may seem like a no-brainer, but there are nuances. Increasingly, monitoring equipment that people can keep at home, a blood pressure cuff, a digital glucometer, a stethoscope, a pulse oximeter to measure blood oxygen, or a Doppler monitor that checks a fetus's heartbeat may give doctors information they need, reducing the number of in-person visits required. Someone's overall physical health may tip the scales on whether the in-person exam is needed. A 25-year-old in generally good health is usually a better candidate for telehealth than a 75-year-old with multiple chronic conditions. But some health complaints typically require in-person examination, doctors said, such as abdominal pain, severe musculoskeletal pain, or problems related to the eyes and ears. Abdominal pain could signal trouble with gallbladder, liver, appendix. We wouldn't know how to evaluate it without an exam. Unless a doctor does a physical exam too often, children with ear infections receive prescriptions for antibiotics. Comparing prescribing differences between telemedicine visits, urgent care, and primary care visits is a study that's apparently ongoing, and no results yet, according to this article. In obstetrics, the panic accelerated a gradual shift to fewer in-person prenatal visits. Typically, a pregnancy involves 14 in-person visits. Some models now recommend 8 or fewer. So the women who received up to a dozen prenatal visits in person, and those who received a mix of in-person and virtual visits, no significant differences were found in a study that measured the results of those pregnant ladies. And so that's kind of good news. Contraception is another area where less may be more. Patients can discuss the pros and cons of different options virtually and may need to schedule a visit only if they want an IUD inserted. That's not really germane to our Medicare audience, is it? But if something is new or changes, Then if a new symptom crops up, patients should generally schedule an in-person visit. Even if a patient has a chronic condition like diabetes or heart disease that is under control and care is managed by a familiar physician, sometimes things change. That usually calls for a face-to-face meeting. So I think that's the primary gist of our article about which is better. I'm still going to say that I'm staying out of the doctor's office. Every opportunity I have, I'm going to use telemedicine if I can get away with it. So I'm glad you agree with me on that, Randy.
Well, you know, another thing I was going to bring up, just a little short comment, is that every time I've ever been in the hospital, which isn't often, but the times that I have been, they want to get you out of there like the plague because they know that a hospital is no place for a sick person.
Well, that's one of two reasons, because they know that you're likely to get sicker the longer you stay. But the other reason is that the reimbursement rates, the insurance companies are operating under mandates from the feds, and they are not able to keep you in a hospital as long as you might want to stay.
I don't know of anybody that wants to stay in the hospital. It's certainly not me.
Hospitals may be different now than they used to be. Back in 1954, my mother complained incessantly to my father, to our local doctor, who was our neighbor, basically anybody who would listen, that something was wrong with her, but she didn't know what it was. And so finally, our doctor said, look, let me put you in the hospital and you can just stay there as long as you want to. Consider it to be like a hotel where they give you room service and bring your meals to you in bed. And then eventually we'll figure out what's wrong with you. Well, it took a long time, and it took a young intern, maybe not an intern, but a newly minted doctor to make the actual diagnosis. And the diagnosis was that she had polio. Now, this was 1954. She was one of the last Americans to get polio after the vaccine came out, the Salk vaccine. Mm-hmm. And so when it was realized that she had polio, she was also pregnant. And this pregnancy, she said, was different. There was something wrong. She didn't know what it was. So the polio diagnosis was made, and they schlepped her into Chicago, and she was put into one major hospital. And then when it was time to deliver my brother, who was perfectly healthy, she was carted across the street on a gurney to a different hospital. I don't know whether one didn't have maternity ward or something like that. But anyway, she was perfectly fine hanging around in our local hospital, which is a beautiful, magnificent gift from the woman who built our house that we just sold. It was a really nice hospital, and she was a guest there as long as she felt like being. So it's different than today. They won't let you stay. You can say, hey, I like it here. I'll pay it for it myself. They won't let you stay anyway.
No, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Well, you know something? The crickets have chirped.
I didn't hear one cricket chirp.
I kept them under wraps so it didn't disturb your thought process.
But good man. It's very, very easy to run me off the rails.
I don't think so. Not that bad. So anyway, let's go ahead and wrap her up. We've spent our 75 cents worth of airtime today on Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. Dog.
I'll answer to damn near anything.
Doug talked about all the various ways you can get access to his book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2023. So I'm going to let that go as being covered. But in the meantime, let's talk about, we really thank you for joining us, because you could have been in 100 different places and you weren't. You were here with us spending a few moments of your time listening to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And if you could find time and the inclination to give us a rating on the podcast and or the book, 5 stars would be awesome. We're always in the rating wars, so if you can help us out, we would be very appreciative, and that would make a mark on the positive side of the ledger for today. Well, let's go ahead and sign her off. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma. No more. He's up in the high nosebleed section behind Cave Creek, Arizona, I'm going to chalk him in at an altitude of about 16.3.
Oh, geez. Give me my oxygen mask. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We'll look forward to meeting again very soon.